Well, good afternoon. I would thank you for the special music. I had a feeling that Jonathan would cover Halloween. It conjures back a lot of memories of the 1950s and 60s when we celebrated it, and it seemed so innocent, and it has become so dark. So it's an interesting time. It's a pleasure to be with you. Always welcome the opportunity to speak to God's people. We'll continue, and we're going to get through it. We're almost at the end of the book of Daniel, of Living in Babylon. We enter in chapter 10, the longest continuous prophecy in the entire Bible. We will cover chapter 10 and a very short part of chapter 11, because 11 deserves its own time. Recall in the original writings of the book of Daniel and all the books of the Old Testament, there are no chapters or verse breaks. It's one continuous thought. And punctuated nearly always by a very interesting reign of a certain king at a certain time. And that's the way they counted time, was the ascent and changeover from king to king, reign to reign. So today we continue the theme of living in Babylon. The title for today is Daniel 10 and 11, Living in Babylon, the Glorious Man and the Cities of Angels. As a quick refresher, to recall that Jerusalem had been destroyed by Babylon. The kingdom of Babylon came in, captured the inhabitants of Jerusalem, carted them away to Babylon, and destroyed all they knew. Thousands of people were taken, Daniel of which was one. He has risen in all these years, these decades that the book of Daniel up till chapter 10 encompasses, and he has a position very high in the kingdom, and he's known as an interpreter of dreams and visions and prophecy. Again, we live today in a type of modern Babylonish system. Culturally, religiously, somewhat economically, and if today and tonight, All Hallows' Eve, if that isn't a symbolic representation of a Babylonian system, I'm not sure what is. And though we are blessed and we are protected, we do not call this system home, and we must learn somehow to adapt. So in that adaptation, in many ways, Daniel is the poster boy of how to live in Babylon. For he too was blessed, but captive, and he longed for Jerusalem. So let's get into it in chapter 10, beginning in verse 1. Now note the time signature here, and we're going to have a lot to unpack. So let's begin. First, verse 1 of chapter 10 of Daniel. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. The message was true, but the appointed time was long, and he understood the message and had understanding of the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant food, no meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all, till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. Now on the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of Uphaz. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. For the men who were with me did not see the vision, but a great terror fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. Therefore, I was left alone when I saw this great vision. And no strength remained in me, for my vigor was turned to frailty in me, and I retained no strength. Yet I heard the sound of his words, and while I heard the sound of his words, I was in a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground. I read all through that. It's a lot to unpack, but the nine verses are important as a group. It tells us, and you can see very easily, that this is during the time of Cyrus, king of Persia. You'll also notice that it says it is revealed to Daniel, and it moves from the third person, you know, he, she, it, all the way to first person when Daniel speaks on his own. Additionally, you'll notice, very rare in the book of Daniel, it says it was revealed to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar. The message was true. The appointed time was long. He uses the word then in verse 2, in those days, I, Daniel. So it moves to first person. So let's unpack all these points because they're very important. It involves chronology. The third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. This dovetails with prior chapters of 6 and 9. We will not turn there. They followed with us along. You'll know that that is the case. It also refers strangely to chapter 1. In chapter 1, verse 21, if you want to turn there, you can. It states effectively that Daniel would be in Babylon during this reign of Cyrus of Persia. Daniel is still in Babylon. They estimate by their chronology that he is between 85, possibly as old as 97 years old. He has been there almost all his life. All his adult life, he's been there. Daniel is not listed in any of the groups that returned to Jerusalem. We are not told why. Based on this chronology, it's interesting that the first wave during Cyrus of returning Israelites were on their way back to Jerusalem. I'll refer you to the book of Ezra. Chapters 1, 5, and 6 tell of the decree to return. Ezra also states in that book that there would be stops and starts. There'd be some issues, some problems. And more than likely, Daniel knew about them. There were problems with the return. So he knew this. Other manuscripts in verse 1 says it was the time of a great conflict, depending on which translation you have, a great war in some translations. And that's what the vision talks about, a great, great war. It says he receives the message. He truly understands it. And yet he is in mourning for 3 weeks with a special diet. Why? Mourning could be for what the vision he had seen that we're about to read part of today, or his inability to return to Jerusalem. He may have been just too old, but, or for whatever reason, we're just not told. We're not told why he is in mourning, but there's a number of very good possible reasons. Additionally, the book of Ezra talks about these problems. So maybe that was part of the relation to it. Very, very interestingly, in verse 4, it says the 24th day of the first month. Now that should trigger, anytime you see dates of the first month, it should trigger something in your mind's eye. What happens in the first month? It's the beginning of the holy day calendar. And in fact, the 24th day is interesting, because what happens on the 14th through the 21st day of the first month of the calendar? It's Passover, the days of unleavened bread, and internal to all that is the wave sheaf offering. It's Passover. This is the only true semi-reference, and it's very oblique, very vague, to a time of holy days. It's technically not mentioned, but anyone knowing anything about Jewish history or Judaism or reading the New Testament would know this spring season, this month, has to do with an incredible period we know as Passover. And so it is fascinating that he mourned during this 20 days spanning Passover. There's a great deal of commentary written on this, that how could Daniel mourn during the Passover season? Did that mean he didn't observe it? I think he did. He surely didn't forget about Jerusalem. He surely didn't forget about praying to Jerusalem. He was a very, very devout individual. So somehow he mourns spanning this period, 3 weeks worth. I'll reference, if you want to do some extra research, the book of Judith, which is an apocryphal book, talks about holy days and mourning. And there's a whole culture about how to observe the holy days during mourning. So, side question, could Daniel truly celebrate the days of Passover and unleavened bread while he was in Babylon? It's fascinating. There's no temple. It's far, far away. In fact, it's in shambles and it's being rebuilt. There's no temple. There's no lamb to be sacrificed. There's also no Manischewitz wine or Manischewitz egg and onion and unleavened bread, because there's no Strader Brothers. That was just an aside there. I thought you'd get that. So how could he truly celebrate it? So the full observance was very wanting. He couldn't have Passover lamb. So it will be interesting to speculate how he did observe it and what happens in a time of captivity, true captivity, where he's not accommodated as we are. We have great accommodation. We are not forbidden from observing the holy days, not yet anyway. So it's a fascinating question relative to the holy days. But even more than that, why did he pick this time to pray and fast? Possibly because Passover is a time for Daniel as a reminder of the return of captivity, from bondage, to be released from someone who has a stranglehold over you. With the decree of the king in Daniel's day, the Jews would return to Jerusalem, just not Daniel. In verse 5 and 6, in the middle of this chapter, which has got so many subjects and sub-subjects, is this very enigmatic expression of a certain man. It says a very special man. In some translations you may read, it'll say glorious or gleaming man, depending on the translation. So it's really interesting. In Daniel, we're going to hear about hear about angels. We've already had Michael and Gabriel, they've been mentioned. And it says that Daniel met this person as he did somewhat in Daniel 8 and 16 in chapter 9, where he meets these magnificent beings. They're glorious. They're radiant. If we compare Daniel 10 with the appearance of Jesus Christ in Revelation 1 and in Ezekiel, we'll see some common points. So hold your hand in Daniel 10 and move with me to Revelation chapter 1. Revelation chapter 1. And we're going to pick up the thought. And when we read through this, remember that Daniel and Revelation are very similar books. They have some very common themes. In fact, a lot of the studies, when they speak of Daniel, there's heavy reference to the book of Revelation. So we'll pick it up, Revelation chapter 1 and verse 12. This is John speaking. And then I turned to see the voice that spoke with me. And having turned, I saw seven golden lampstands. And in the midst of the 11 lampstands, one like the Son of Man. Now remember, if John is speaking about the Son of Man, and this is the New Testament, he's speaking about one individual in particular, who's called the Son of Man throughout the New Testament. This Son of Man was clothed with a garment down to the feet, girded about the chest with a golden band. His head and hair were white like wool, as white as snow. His eyes like a flame of fire. His feet were like fine brass, as if refined in a furnace. And his voice was as the sound of many waters or a multitude. He had in his right hand seven stars. Out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword. And his countenance was like the sun shining in his strength. Verse 17 is very interesting. When I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead, but he laid his right hand on me, saying, "Do not be afraid." This goes on, and if you have a red letter edition in the book of Revelation, you know these are the words of Jesus Christ, because that is exactly who John, the Apostle John, in the book of Revelation sees. So in Daniel 10, who is this person? In Daniel 10, the similarities are very, very interesting. He says in verse 5, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of Uphaz. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. Sound familiar? Depending on if you line these two up, you'll see at least 4 to 5 points of near exact agreement. Is that conclusive that Daniel 10 is talking about Jesus Christ? It's a theophany. He's seen him before, and the one like the Son of Man is referenced in the book of Daniel, so this wouldn't be the first time. What's interesting in the commentators, and I must have checked, I got to be honest with you, online and on my bookshelf, at least 15. They are divided over this. Some are emphatic. They are completely persuaded this is Jesus Christ. Some say it's a very powerful angel. I'm not completely persuaded. I think the jury may be out. I think it's got some of the hallmarks, but I'll let you decide, because it isn't conclusive. Daniel and his three friends had encountered Christ at least 2 to 3 times. If you remember the furnace, Daniel 7, and in reading Daniel's reaction to this image of this individual, he spends most of his time on his hands and knees or all fours. One bows to God. One does not bow to an angel. And throughout the Bible, you'll see angels asking them, please get up. I'm a man just like you. And that in fact, in and of itself, is a fascinating study. Let's read verse 10 and 11 again. Read verse 10 and 11. It says, suddenly a hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. He said to me, O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. And while he was speaking this word to me, I stood trembling. It's interesting. So Daniel is first face down, then on hands and knees. He strengthens when he stands. If it's Christ, he would not be standing unless he was instructed to do so. Finally, he is in verse 11. Really, really fascinating. So we see this as a great understanding of this image of an individual that Daniel sees. In fact, if you read it carefully, chapter 10 may be talking about two different people. In verse 5 and 6, maybe seeing the glorious man. In verse 10, the hand that touched him may be someone else. It's interesting nonetheless. This is an unbelievably bright and powerful individual. If it is an angel and not Jesus Christ, it still gives us an understanding of how powerful to the human mind the angels are. Daniel's strength. So it says in verse 10, 11, let's move to 12. He says, then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel. This is verse 12. For from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard. And I have come because of your words. Verse 13. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. And behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. For I have been left alone there with the kings of Persia. Now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision refers to many days yet to come. This is absolutely fascinating. The prince of Persia, or the princes of Persia, are considered to be demons. And this prince of Persia withstood this glorious man. So you might say, how could it be Jesus Christ? With one fell swoop, with the sword of fire coming out of him, he could have destroyed any prince of Persia or kings of Persia. God or Christ could destroy, but possibly it was not the time. Interestingly, the Expositor's Bible Commentary states this, quote, God can surely override all resistance, but this accords to demons certain limited powers of obstruction. God allows, this is unquote, that demons are given certain limited powers of obstruction. In other words, for a time. God allows this, just as he does with you and me. He allows us to do things that we shouldn't. He allows things to happen that shouldn't, and he could stop it immediately. But he doesn't. He doesn't. For now, he says, he withstood him. For now, demons are allowed to do certain things, as are we. One of the reasons may be that our works are therefore exposed. The things that we do are exposed. And we learn from them. The demons apparently do not. So again, it's very hard to say who this was. So I have my own suspicions who I think it is. So let's begin the longest and most detailed prophecy in the Bible. We're going to pick it up again from verse 12 to get an understanding and kind of a running start. It says, he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard. And I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. And behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. For I had been left there alone with the kings of Persia. Now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision refers to many days yet to come. When he had spoken such words to me, I turned my face toward the ground and became speechless. And suddenly one having the likeness of the sons of man, or sons of men, touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke to him, saying, who stood before me? My Lord, because of the vision, my sorrows have overwhelmed me, and I have retained no strength. For how can the servant of my Lord's talk with you, my Lord? As for me, no strength remains in me now, nor is any breath felt in me. Then again, the one having the likeness of a man touched me and strengthened me. And he said, O man, greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be to you. Be strong, yes, be strong. So when he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. Then he said, do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I have come forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is noted in the scripture of truth. No one upholds me against these except Michael, your prince. Again, there is just so much here. Note that the angel is there to strengthen him. This concept of strength, in fact, the actual word or its cognates are repeated some 8 times. Note in verses 12 through 14, the timing. God sends his angels to Daniel since the day he began to pray, but it took a while. There was resistance from outside forces that they had to deal with. The point is that God heard him. Your prayer was heard, and he would be helped. He would be assisted. This is a critical point that's buried in the chapter, and we seem sometimes to be just completely overwhelmingly focused on the prophecies, and they are, let be clear, they are important, but all the points in the chapter are important. And this critical issue is that God hears us, and he wants to help us. In this case, he gives angels, but the purpose is to give understanding and to give strength. In giving this understanding and strength, it gives hope and hopefully peace. And one would think that it did with Daniel by what he says. You have strengthened me, he says. That's what you came to do, to give me this strength of peace. We should recall, all of us should, that there have been times when we have prayed. All of us have prayed. And God gave some understanding and some meaning. And often, as is possibly here with Daniel, not quite as we expect. We were given understanding, maybe not in the way we had expected. We expect one thing, but God explains us. And that makes it that part of understanding. And maybe we said, indeed, we understand. And so with Daniel, I've had this happen. I know you have had this happen. We've all had it happen. And when we pray for understanding, be careful what you ask for. You may be given it, but not quite in the manner or the form that we expected. In some smaller, great way. And often we see this understanding, often we see it in hindsight after the events have occurred, exactly as God has told us. So while we're in Babylon, God teaches us a great thing. With all he is doing, with all that God, with Jesus Christ as his right hand, is doing, can you imagine? We talk about managing the tasks during the day. Can you imagine what he has during the day? He's got a few things on his plate. Yes, he has myriads of angels, but it's very clear that Daniel says God heard him. But he is God. So with all he is doing, he hears us, as does Christ. We need not turn there, but Luke chapter 18 and verse 1, Christ tells us we must be in prayer persistent. He also says, do not give up. Be persistent and not give up. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 14. Let me turn there if you wish. It says, I'll read it for you. It says, are not all angels ministering servants sent to serve those who will inherit salvation? Isn't that what they do? Isn't that what God does? He uses his angels as ministering servants, serving servants, sent to serve those who will inherit salvation. Those that will inherit salvation, obviously, are human beings. It doesn't say we're going to see an angel as Daniel did, or multiple angels, different angels. It doesn't say we'll see the Son of Man, but it says they're sent nonetheless to assist. As was talked about in the first message, there is a dark side of the world. There is a mysterious and very foreboding part of the world, and we never see it. We can sometimes see this, as was mentioned, this door that opens and closes. And it's a frightful thing, and we are to stay away from it. But there's also this good side of the supernatural realm that we do not see. We'll probably never see in this life. And yet, Hebrews tells us, God's ministering angels still serve his people, those that will inherit salvation. Verse 18 says, even in Babylon, we must be strong, especially in it. Peace and strength, peace and strength come from God. In verse 20, what's interesting about this, in the middle of all this, in verse 20, it says, do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia, and there will be a prince of Greece. This verse in this chapter, verse 20, involves again our old friends, the Daniel, the books and prophecies of Daniel, the different chapters, our old friends, Media Persia, the kingdom of Persia that took over, and then Greece. Not only are there kings, physical kings of Persia and Greece that we know from history, there's also the demonic forces that have been set over them. That this angel says, or the Son of Man, says that he needed to fight. Note that this being has been fighting. How he's been fighting would be interesting. How do they fight? It's never described. You know, what type of spiritual swords or instruments do they use? We're not told. He's been fighting the prince of the kingdom of Persia. Note again the strange 21 days, the length of Daniel's mourning. That 21 days is interesting in by itself. There may be a connections. The commentators are not agreed. They're not clear, but we can guess. It spans Passover. He was in Persia, this being was, against the prince of Persia and the kings of Persia alone. It says then that Michael, the archangel, which is not really used in the Old Testament, takes over for him so he can get to Daniel and speak with Daniel. This being will go back. And soon, verse 20, the prince of Greece will come. The prince, the word there in the Hebrew is an interesting word. It can mean captain, commander, chief, or prince. It's used repeatedly in this chapter, verse 13, 20, and 21, is like the patron angel, this very special angel, both good and evil, bad. It seems that angels had been placed over city-states. It is a fascinating concept. It may relate to what we know as what's called theologically as the divine counsel of God. But there are good angels in the divine counsel of God and angels that have rebelled against God, and they are evil. They are agents of evil. Ephesians 6:12, refer there. We do not fight, Paul says, against flesh and blood. We fight in reality against powers of darkness. And this day typifies them. The angels who are rebelled and evil, they oppose God. But this concept of angels being placed over cities is indeed an old one. And I won't go into the history of it. You can look up the history behind the concept of angels, demonic as well as benevolent, placed over cities, countries, and lands. This common belief at the day extends even today into our time. You may know that. You'll note the city, and of all people we should understand this, the city of angels, which, by the way, host two championship teams for World Series in the NBA. We are the city of angels. And I know that has connotations, but let's investigate this a bit. Note Los Angeles, Los Angeles, and I checked with our resident Spanish experts on how this poor gringo is to pronounce it. It's Los Angeles. The full name of the city of Los Angeles is very interesting. And here we go. I've been coached on this. I'm going to do my best. It is El Pueblo de Nuestra Señora La Reina de Los Angeles del Río Porinciucula. I knew I was going to blow that last word. Maybe I was close. El Pueblo de Nuestra Señora La Reina de Los Angeles del Río Porinciucula. It's a Portuguese derivative name, I was told. It means the town of Our Lady, the Queen of Angels of this river. It's fascinating. That's the full name of the city of Los Angeles. Therefore, our local church, we don't use all that. We just say UCGLA. We're the Church of the Angels, the good angels. So I thought you'd find that interesting. Just a side remark, little background history to where we live. In verse 21, we're going to read this, is full of many references. It says, but I will tell you what is noted in the scripture of truth. The scripture of truth, or the book of truth. What is that? The scripture of truth, that the original is closer to the writings of truth. That really doesn't help us, because it's really not mentioned in any other part of the Old Testament, not directly like this. Later books that were written, like the Book of Enoch, a very interesting book, has the reference to over and over again of the heavenly tables, or the written tables of heaven. We're not sure what it is, but we know it is not the Book of Life, or else it would be called the Book of Life. It's very, very different. In the latter part of this verse 21, it talks about Michael, this angel, the reference to Michael. He is considered the angel over God's people, and we will see him again in chapter 12 in great relief. in great stature, the angel Michael. He is called the archangel in Jude 9. Only in the New Testament is that term really used. So we'll see him again. And for some reason, chapter 10 and chapter 11 in our Bibles are kind of merged together. They had to do this because of the thinking. This parenthetical remark that's in the New King James Version may be in yours. It starts out, this last part of verse 21 of chapter 10, 21, the last part, mine has a parentheses mark. No one upholds me, says this being, against these two princes of Persia and Greece, except Michael, your prince. It then, the verse goes on in the original. Also in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. End of parentheses. This being is referencing Michael the archangel. Verse 2, and now I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will arise in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than them all. By his strength through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm or the kingdom of Greece. Then a mighty king shall arise, who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he has arisen, his kingdom shall be broken up and divided toward the four winds of heaven, but not among his posterity, nor according to his dominion with which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be uprooted even for others besides these. Absolutely fascinating. And this begins technically the prophecy of chapters 11 and chapter 12. The entire continuing trajectory, as before, relates to the kingdom of Persia and Greece. In fact, those physical kings. It says three kings of Persia, then a fourth. That fourth of Persia is universally understood as Ahasuerus or Xerxes. And that takes us to the time far into the future of the book of Esther and her book. The verses 3 and 4 with this mighty king of Greece is referring again to someone we've seen before in the book of Daniel, and that is Alexander the Great. This is the third or possibly fourth time Alexander has been described in Daniel. He's that important. The future of that the Middle East just revolves around Alexander the Great and what happened. It's that important. It's then broken up into four sections, Alexander's kingdom is. Four kings, none of whom are of his posterity. Alexander's son was killed, was murdered, and never took the throne. He was too young. And so four generals or four kings, none of which were as mighty, arise. The rest of chapter 11, we will take up and resume next time. It is very long. It is incredibly detailed. And so we need to take our time. What's interesting, this is written far into the future of Daniel, our past, Daniel's future. But it is so accurate. It even moves into the last days, part of it does, to the end time. But what's so interesting is Daniel chapter 11, and you can read it ahead of time. You consider that homework if you wish. It is so detailed and so accurate with what we know of history of Media or the Medes and the Persians and Greece that the critics, the historical critics, call it false. It could not be prophetic. Daniel couldn't have written this. It is so accurate. Therefore, it never happened. It was written after the fact. But it is true, and we will talk about that. And when we read it, you'll understand. It centers only on two of the four kings of Greece. There were four, but only two are ever referenced. And they're given interesting names. They're known as the King of the South and the King of the North. The Ptolemaic Empire is the Kingdom of the South. Think Egypt. Think South and think Egypt. But that's the Ptolemaic Empire and the succeeding kings. The Seleucid Empire are the kings of the north. Think Greece and Syria. They're much more expansive, but these are the principal countries or areas. Greece and Syria for the north, Egypt of the south. And guess what's right smack dab in the middle? It's kind of a geographical switch as you go around the Mediterranean. What is between Greece and Syria and Egypt? Israel and Palestine, right in the very middle. I'll give you a little hint, the way I look at Daniel chapter 11 when I read it. and it helps us, especially in the United States, because you might liken it to the American Civil War. The American Civil War over 100 years ago, King of the North and the Kings of the South. Fascinating, fascinating parallel. What was in the middle between the Civil War of the King of the North and the King of the South? Slavery. Those held in bondage. The slaves were the key. And this was all told to Daniel. So when we read it, think of the Civil War. It's North against South. And who would win? All while living in Babylon. So let's conclude. Before we continue, next time we're going to do a very deep dive into the prophecy that apparently upset Daniel so very much. Let's make some observations. In Babylon, as we, Daniel was surrounded by a carnal pagan society. Can you imagine? We talk about being in Babylon. It's the analogy. He was in literally Babylon and the succeeding empires. Not only was he in Babylon, he was into the Medo-Persian Empire, equally pagan. He kept his faith. And as we can see, with regular intimate contact with God. And although a prophet, and once again, the prophecies are important. They're very, very important. They are often of sad, and very serious events. Hence, possibly Daniel's mourning. So we need to understand that. But we also need to understand that they end in the Father and Christ's reign and their ultimate kingdom. For all these kingdoms of all these successive empires, the Babylonians, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire, the Roman Empire, Daniel's image of Daniel 2, all the succeeding empires, it all ultimately culminates in God's kingdom with Jesus Christ. The issue is we've got to get through Babylon to get to that kingdom. History has to play out. And there was a phrase that I heard many, many decades ago, even here in the United States, as blessed as we are, no matter what country you're in, where you've been, no country is immune from history. No country, no people is immune from history. We are all going to be subject to it. So we can focus on interpreting the nuances and the details of prophecy, and they will be these nuances and, I mean, details, small details. They will be speculation. Only in truth will we know, and probably as it comes to us, or in retrospect. It's important. The prophecies are important. But we also must focus on the nuanced portions of Daniel 10. Not so nuanced, because it's repeated over and over again, and we can overlook it very easily. We can focus on the kings of Persia and the kings of Greece, the demons over the kingdom of Persia and the kingdom of Greece. But he also says to us to pray often, to pray as Daniel did with sure intent, a purpose, an objective when we pray. So we have logical, some system of what we're asking and why we're asking it of God. And to do this without ceasing. It says that Daniel prayed humbly. The angel says that you were praying humbly to God. So that should be a part of it as well. I think what's fascinating is sometimes we don't pray, or we are reluctant to pray because God won't hear. He's a busy guy. He's got a lot to do. But axiomatically, logically, he's God. And that's that term we use to believing Christians. He's God, which means he is the creator through Jesus Christ of everything we see, of reality, of the things that we don't see, can't see. Even with the aids of telescopes or microscopes, we still can't see the universe. God created that. And so, again, logically, any being that could create all that, hears our prayers. He can juggle more than one thing at a time, because we often think of God in human terms. I have trouble, and as you get older, you juggle less and less. He can juggle infinite. He does juggle infinitely. We also know that there are at least two listening. We know that God and his son Jesus Christ are listening. And we remind ourselves the book of Hebrews tells us emphatically that he promises he will hear, he promises that he will send his messengers to assist. somehow, some way. We have been probably helped by angels all our life and not even knowing it. It says we could entertain, same book says we may entertain angels completely unaware, completely unknowing that we have been assisted this way. As we will see in the last two chapters, Daniel was troubled, but God had shown him over and over and over again answers and understanding. Vaguely though they may have been in vision, God attempted to help him to understand, to give him peace. Because Daniel knew that God knows, that God is in charge. Daniel also knew that God would bring it about, that ultimately this, if he had prophesied that the kingdoms of ancient Greece and Persia and Babylon would occur and would be defeated, that God's kingdom would ultimately arise. And that's something we need to remember. That's the lesson for us of Daniel 10. Thank you, and have a very wonderful and rewarding rest of your Sabbath.